Today is Pesach Sheni. So Pesach Sheni is, I don't want to say funny day, it's a confusing day somewhat. Some people don't say Tachlun, some people eat Matzah, some people do nothing. Now the truth is, if a person were to look in Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, the earlier Achronim, there's very little mention of the Yom Tov known today as Pesach Sheni. This is very little, there's almost nothing mentioned about Pesach Sheni. There is a Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin writes from the Megillas Tainis that you're not supposed to have a spadim on Pesach Sheni. That's, I think, still niskabel somewhat today, that people don't have a spadim on Pesach Sheni. Someone just asked me, he had a Kamas Matzeva today. So there's always a Shaila when you have a Kamas Matzevas, do they turn into, a glorified Levayas? So I told him, I said, you should try to make sure it doesn't turn into a Levayas without too many spadim, and talk about the Matzeva, and talk about the writing of it, and try to make it not so much eulogized procedure, because that's really what's awesome. Not saying Tachron is found in later Achronim, it's found in Prichadosh, it's found in Aruch HaShulchan, but it's not in Mechab and Ramah. To the best of my knowledge, most of the yeshivas, or those what we call hardcore yeshivas, say Tachron today. I think that's what they do. There's an interesting shayla that came up with Tzidkoscha yesterday, whether or not you should say Tzidkoscha yesterday. So Reb Shlomo Zalman has what I consider a very compelling argument why one should say Tzidkoscha. I said Tzidkoscha in my shul. I got a lot of flack for it, but after I explained it to everyone, I think they understood. Shlomo Zalman makes the argument that the only time we find you don't say Tachanun on the Erev of a Yom Tov is when the Yom Tov starts at night. The Moshul. You have something like Shabbos. Shabbos starts Friday night, so the Mincha prior to it, even if it's Mincha Gedoila, which is a few hours before it, but the Tefillah Samoch, the Yom Tov, is already Haschalas a Yom Tov, whatever that means, you don't say Tachanun. Points out, Reb Shlomo Zalman, there's no Yom Tov called Pesach Sheni. And even if the Imtim Tzolem, there's a Yom Tif, it doesn't start last night. Because what's the Yom Tif? The day they're able to bring the Korban Pesach. They brought the Korban Pesach today after Chatzos. So last night was nothing. This morning is technically not really anything either. But you could say this morning is closer to Bein Arbaim. But to say, not to have Tachanun yesterday, argued Shlomo Zalman, just doesn't make any sense. And therefore Shlomo Zalman ruled that one should say Tachanun yesterday, or the equivalent of Tzidkoscha. I think it's a fair point. I think there's no such chalois Yom Tov called Pesach Sheni. Now, if my lumnus is correct, and this is what we'll talk about Blei Neder Tuesday night, we paskin that we don't say Tachanun on Erev Lag BaOmer. That's the halach. So if my lumnus is right, that means the Yom Tov starts at night, that means you should be allowed to shave at night. Okay, that's what we'll leave you till Tuesday night to explain why that's not a kasha. But that's just following that lumnus, it should lead to that conclusion, 100%. But the Amiras HaTachanun, I think, is only totally when you say Michal Yom Tov. Reb Chaim Noah disagrees, and Ktzayis HaShulchan, he writes, not like that. I think if you look in Reb Henkin's Luach, it says Yeshayimim V'Yeshayimim. But to me, it made more sense not to say, Tzidkoscha instead of omitting Tzidkoscha. The eating matzah on Pesach Sheni is also interesting. What? Because of Hoyt. Yeah, that I heard. Someone told me that also. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. The whole week of Hoyt, they don't say Tachanun. Yeah. That's what I heard. Yeah. So, it's for that week. Yeah. Eating matzah on Pesach Sheni is a discussion, but there's an interesting halachic discussion. Most people who eat matzah on Pesach Sheni ate it last night. Now, that's probably not correct. Because if you're going to try to mimic what they did, or what we should be doing, because we're all Tameim, you should be eating it tonight. Because they bring the Korban Pesach this afternoon, and they eat the matz, they eat the Korban Pesach, balayla. So why does everyone eat it last night? So some people suggest the reason why they eat it last night is because if you eat it tonight, you'd be running into a shayla of Baal Tosef. Maybe you're trying to make a mitzvah, or add on to the mitzvah, so the Klichem der writes in his commentary to Chumash, that it's probably better not to do it then. The Chazanish held eating matzah on Pesach Sheni is always also. You should never eat matzah on Pesach Sheni. The Stipler was more into it because there was a little bit more Chassidish listening to it. But I don't know. That's the Talmud eating matzah. But again, none of this is really found in Shulchan Aruch and the early Rechman. Because you're trying to create a mitzvah, a din to eat matzah when you don't have to. You have to eat matzah on the Pesach Rishon, not on Pesach Sheni. But again, there's one to discuss. I think years ago we discussed once some of the alumnus of Pesach Sheni with why they were tameim. But there's a very valuable Musa Haskell, I believe, from Pesach Sheni, is that the lesson of the people at that time, the Gemara says in Sukkah, who were these people? So the Gemara gives a whole bunch of different shot on who they were. So the Rishonim already asked, why do we have to know who they were? What's the significance of the word? Whoever they were, they were. So the Musa Haskell that we take away from this, that these people had great excuses to why they couldn't bring a Korban Pesach. They were busy Oisik with Meis Mitzvah, they were busy burying Nadav Aviv. Great reasons, all justifiable reasons why they couldn't bring a Korban Pesach. And yet, they went out of their way to find a way to get involved. They didn't want to be exempted. They didn't want an excuse. They wanted to be involved. So they came to Moshe Rabbeinu where they're trying to get us, find us a way to get us involved in this mitzvah. And today we have the reverse attitude. Today we look for heterim and we look for excuses. Kol Shekein, when we have good excuses. Here they had the best excuse in the world. The Gemara testifies. And these were great excuses. Nonetheless, they wanted to be mechayev. So I think that's the most haskell in my book for Pesach Sheni. Forgetting so much the eating of the matzah and all the other things, it's this lesson of not trying just to look for excuses to get out of things. It's trying to go beyond what's demanded. I think that's really the lesson of Pashas Achim Mois and Kedoshim, is that we live in a society today, both in the Jewish world and non-Jewish world, where people settle for mediocrity. Everyone's just happy to be, you know, mediocre. I think the Torah demands of us, Kedoshim too, is a requirement for She'ifas HaGadlus. We should strive for great things. Whether it be in Torah and Avodah Hashem, whether it be in the job we do. We live in a world today that as long as you're above, you know, the lowest level, everyone's very happy. I think Kedoshim too is a very high level to reach, but the Torah demands of us because the Torah wants us to be great. You know, make America great again, you know, make Judaism great again. We can do it. But we live in a society, it's for sure felt. I see it with the teenagers of the world today. It's mediocrity is very happy. Oh, I'm okay. Listen, a kid handed me a test mamash on Friday. He tells me, I hope I got a 65. I said, that's your sheifas? You hope to get a 65? You should tell me, I hope I got 100. That's sheifas. Sheifas for greatness. The generation that is, it's mamash. The heights we set are so low. It's just, okay, listen, you know, I'll be Hisharim Shabbos. Yeah, that's what we said 80 years ago. When you had Yidden, he said, listen, guy, Hisharim Shabbos. He had so many other things going on. Today, that's not what we're striving for. At least he's that. It should be much higher heights. And that's really what the Torah demands of us when it says Kedoshim to you. We have to be holy. It's not easy. No one says it's an easy thing to do, but we have to at least try. Today, we don't even try. We don't even get off, we don't even try to push ourselves to accomplish greatness. And that's really the lesson of Pesach Sheni, is a she'ifas for greatness. She'ifas, desires to want to be involved, to want to take it to the next level. And that to me, is the most compelling lesson of Pesach Sheni. In Parashat Achim Mois Kedoshim, we find the lav in the Torah repeated three times. The lav of Moilach. Very interesting lav about giving one's child to an Avodah Zarah. We spoke a little bit about it in the Chumash on Wednesday, but it occurred to me over Shabbos that there might be another lesson of Moilach. I think one of the lessons of Moilach we spoke about from Rabbi David Kviat is where you put your priorities. Is your priorities in spirituality or is it in materialistic things? But I was thinking afterwards, there's a deeper lesson to Moilach. The Chafetz Chaim Paskin that if a person sends his children to places where they're not going to be successful, al pi derech ha-Torah, that's also a transgression of the law of Moilach. When a person sets their child up for failure in a spiritual way, you don't give your child the best chance to succeed as a good Torah Jew, that's also a fulfillment of the law of Moilach. So many times in life, people do things and say things that really confuses their children. Moshe Feinstein would write over and over that the worst thing someone could do for chinuch is contradiction. You do one thing and you tell your kids to do something else. You know, do as I say and not as I do. That's a big problem in the political world today. Any of a certain party, we're not going to say which one, always likes to lecture people about women's rights and this and that, and then in their own private life, they're mushchasim to the highest level. So their attitude is, you do what I say, but I do what I want. When children see that message, they get very, very confused. And it often leads them off to say this whole thing doesn't make any sense, it's all contradictory, and I'm not interested. It's very possible that when we give these messages, and I don't believe anyone means to give these messages, it just happens naturally, we're really getting ourselves into this problem. Although we don't actually pick up our kid and put him in a fire today, Baruch Hashem, but when we give them these very confusing messages, it really conjures up in their mind doubts and issues. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was very machbid that everything in chinuch has to be emes. He said, they say the story, it's both, I saw this in a couple of places, that when Rabbi Yaakov came to visit South Shore over here, in the beginning of the school, he came to visit Rabbi Yom's yeshiva, and he noticed that the mezuzahs were very low on the post. So Rabbi Yaakov asked his son, why are the mezuzahs so low? So Rabbi Yom said, because the kids are very small, they can't reach. I want them to be able to kiss the mezuzahs and walk in the room. So Rabbi Yaakov said, that's a very noble cheshbon, but it's not correct. You don't want to teach children that a mezuzah belongs on the lower half of the post. Instead, said Rabbi Yaakov, told him, put the mezuzahs back up and buy little stools for the kids to stand on. This way they can stand on the stool and touch. Rabbi Yaakov felt that any time you give over form of sheker to the children, then they're going to wake up later and say, what's going on? I used to say this more often when you work in a yeshiva, the yeshiva has an achrayus to be mechanech the children in what's right. Because kids remember, I remember when I was in yeshiva, we did it like this. So if the yeshiva can't answer why they did that, then they're really being mechanech and sheker. Rabbi Yaakov thought that that's not right. You have to be mechanech children in the most honest ways and not give them sheker. So many times people give off messages that are very confusing for the children. Someone showed me two very interesting clips I got today, you know, with WhatsApp. Someone showed me a video, a very moving video, where you have maybe some of you saw it. It's a video of a couple, a husband and wife, in the kitchen, and the wife, you saw this, right? Unbelievable, so moving. I said it over as a drasha yesterday. I thought it was very moving. For those who didn't see it, it's kedai to see it inside, because as Rashi says in the beginning of Parshas Achrimos, and the Mefarshim point out, that sometimes when you bring out a moshel, you bring out a story, it drums home the point so much clearer than anything else. And this video really struck me, where basically you have two parents, you have a husband and wife sitting in the kitchen, and the wife is marking some form of tests. And you see her face starts to really get depressed and saddened while she's marking them. And her husband looks like a real nice guy, a sincere guy, a good man. And he asks his wife, what's going on? Why are you so sad? So she says, I'm marking, I gave a project to my class. If they can be any technological device, what would they want to be? And she says, this kid writes, he wants to be an iPhone. And the mother continues to read it, and she says, yeah, I want to be an iPhone because my father, no matter how tired he is, he always has time for his iPhone, and that's always the first thing he does, and goes on. Really depressing. You feel the whole attitude in the room really gets saddened. And like the father looks like a guy, like the husband's looking at it, he feels so bad for this kid. He thinks to himself, I can only imagine this guy's father must be such a bum. And he asks his wife, which student is it? And the wife says, it's our son. So like it really hits you. You say to yourself, we're always so quick to say it's Yenim's a problem. You know, he's the bad father. The guy next door, the guy on the left of me, the guy on the right of me. Sometimes we're guilty as much as anyone else. So sometimes we don't mean to do things that are incorrect with our children. Or when I spoke about this yesterday in the Marshall, I spoke about grandparents also. Grandparents are, today's generation, grandparents are very involved in their grandchildren's life more than I think in other generations. Today they're in and out of the house, they come, they go, we spend a lot of time with their grandchildren. So it's not only for parents anymore, and not only parents that are grown, adult children also, this is true. They still interact with their parents and learn a lot and pick up messages. So, many times we say, oh, I'm not that guy, it's the other guy. Sometimes we're guilty as that movie really, really, really hit me pretty hard. But then someone sent me another clip where, you have a guy saying, you don't have time to learn, but your Netflix history shows otherwise. That's the same idea. We don't have time for anything, but we do have time for things that we value. But these are some, contradictory messages that we give over to our children. And I think, and I believe that that's possibly included in the love of Melech. When you set your child to fail in spirituality, when you set your child up not to be matzliach as a good Jewish person, it's because you're giving them the wrong messages. I gave examples. You tell your kids they're not allowed to cheat on tests, but you're allowed to cheat at work. You tell your kids that you have to respect the Rebbe, but you spend the Shabbos table bashing the Rav. What do you want the kid to do? Then he comes to school, and all of a sudden now he's supposed to be nice to the Rebbe. All he hears all Shabbos long is that the rabbi is no good and he's corrupt and he gets paid too much and he doesn't work. What do you want the kid to do? So when we give over these very conflicting, confusing messages, in my humble opinion, that might be getting ourselves into the love of Moilus. So although we don't actually put our kids in fire today, we never sometimes do things that cause them to be very confused and question things and ultimately sometimes stray away from the Derech Hashem. Okay, we left off over here in the Gemara in Gittin. A very somewhat confusing Gemara. Rav Chisda walks in and he said, Amar Rav Chisda, Yechalino l'mifsino l'kul gidid alma. Rav Chisda said, I can possibly ever get in the world. Which is obviously a very big statement. You have to have big shoulders to be able to do such a thing. So Amalei Rav in my time, Rav asked me, how can you do that? Based on what premise, what halachic knowledge would you be able to throw out every get that we've ever came across? So Elaim is saying more things, maybe Shem Dechsiv Vekasav. The first pshat is because it says in the Torah Vekasav, V'hocha Ihi Kokasavalei. And over here, she's writing it. So we spoke last week where there's two pshatim in the Rishayim how to learn the Gemara's Kash. All really based on a Taisus and Daf Chav Beis. Taisus and Daf Chav Beis, a very long Taisus and Daf Chav Beis, has a discussion, whose job is it to write the get? Who's the Vekasa? When the Torah writes, he should write the get, who's the he? So pshat number one is, it's the husband. The custom means it's the husband's job to write the get. The custom means the husband has to write the get. And what happens if the husband doesn't know how to write the get? So he hires the Sefer as a Shliach. So the Vikasav is al-abal koi. The chi of Vikasav is on the husband. That's one pshat in the Gemara. The second pshat that Taishma suggests, and he thinks this is more nachis, is that really the husband has no din to write the get. The Vikasav is the cipher. Vikasav, someone should write a get. Who? Doesn't matter. So how do you learn the Gemara's kasha? So the Gemara's kasha is not really from the word Vikasav. The Gemara's kasha is really from the word later on in the pasuk, like Vinasa. That the Torah requires that the husband give his own paper. And if she pays the cipher, so she owns the paper. That's the two pshatim in the Gemara. The Meiri over here seemingly has a different, did not go like that. The Meiri writes, Afo bisha teira amra v'kasav la, even though the Torah writes the words v'kasav la, shadvarim marin sheyehu peirei schar haget. The Meiri assumes that the din that the husband pays for the get before Takanas Chazal was somehow included in the words Vikasav. The words Vikasav tell me not only does the husband have to write the get, he has to make sure a get is written, meaning he has to pay for the payment for the cipher. Parei eschar haget, ain't a kain. It's not like that. Elachachomim zichulo shetehi parei eschar gita. Chazal decided that she should pay for it. Umishum takonis agunas k'tisa beget poshut. So uladas ze girsa shebekan ilemushim the kasav la v'ochi ihu. So according to the Meiri, the problem over here is that the Torah wants the husband to pay for it. That's the problem in the Gemara. The chesaron in our Gemara is that the Torah wants the husband to pay for it. Why? Because v'kasav doesn't just mean who writes it. V'kasav means there's a din v'kasav that the husband is supposed to be achroi for the payment. That's what v'kasav means. V'kasav means that the husband is responsible for the payment of the cipher. And if she pays for the cipher, which is what Chazal instituted, so Chazal's institution is really against the Torah. That's the Gemara's kash. So according to the Meiri, the Gemara's kash is once Chazal instituted, she pays, that's totally going against the Torah.
Why did they institute that she pays?
Because they were worried that if he has to pay, he's never going to do it. It'll just be another reason. Not always. He might want to, but he's not forced to. And since he's the one that's always in the driver's seat, we want to make it as easy as it to make it happen. So Zokta Meiri, Vikasav means that he's responsible for the payment. So points out Reb Nachum over here in Chedusha Reb Nachum, he writes, Umashma Mitzvarov, the ain't Zagri Usa Bahashlichus. You see from the Meiri, the problem over here is not when she pays for it, the cipher is working for her. That's not what the Meiri writes. That's what Taisus wrote. That the problem is if she were to give the money, then the cipher is working for her, and it's not the Vikasav. Says Reb Nachum, that's not what the Meiri says. He doesn't say a word about who's working for who. Rather, the way his father-in-law, Chaim Shmulev, is language we'll talk about. If you hold that Vikasav is going on the husband, not only does the husband have to write the get, he has to make sure every part of the get is done. Meaning, if the husband's either going to write it himself or hire someone, and on top of that, he has to make sure the person gets paid. Vikasav means lefizeh, that the husband has to make sure a get is written. Either he writes it himself, or he hires a shliach, but he's got to make sure a get is written, and therefore pick up the tab for the get to be written. Now, one could have argued you can write a get without paying for it. That's a choshimish, but technical discussion. You know, you wrote the get, now you gave the get, now the soifer will take you to Bezdin for not paying him on a choshimish level. But the Meiri is assuming that the kasav of the Torah is so inclusive that it requires the soifer, the baal, not only to get a soifer, but he's got to pick up the payment of the soifer, because that's all included in his din of the kasav. That's what he learns.
Yeah, how does Chazal have the right to do that?
Which one? To make her pay?
Yeah.
Right. So that's really the Gemara's cash. According to this, the Gemara's cash is, now that Chazal did this, they basically were oikah the Torah. Now we got big problems. That's really, in essence, the Gemara's cash, Lefiza. That when Chazal made this takana, so it's not really Rav Chizda's passing what we're getting. What Rav Chizda's pointing out to us is that based on that takana's Chazal and the Gemara and Baba Basra, we're going against the Torah. So we have to figure out how to make these two worlds shtip.
Why is
what?
To do that if they want.
So that's the question. So that's part of the Gemara's answer. And the answer is what they did was they played around with the money and therefore they were able to do it because of Hefker, Bez and Hefker, or other Cheshbainus they can use. But that's just the Gemara. In the Kasha state, the Gemara's Kasha is that based on the Tekanas Chazal, you're going directly against the Torah. So the... If I'm sorry?
If she has to pay, if he's a sofer, a sofer wants a divorce and it costs 10 bucks to write it, is that part of the fee? Now also she has to pay?
Mistama, I would assume she'd have to pay. Now he could be meichlet, I guess. We'll talk later on, we'll get to some other achorin, we'll talk about cases where the sofer doesn't want payment, he doesn't want to charge. He's such a good guy, he just wants to get these people divorced, he doesn't charge. We'll see that might make a difference later on in the sugya. But the assumption of the Gemara is now that if the Torah dictates that the husband has to pick up the tab, then the Isha can't pick up the tab.
Are the Chum saying that the woman must pay, or it's only an option to get things moving?
It sounds like she has to, because if not, then we could just say Hachem Ma'iskinam, where she wants to. She doesn't have to. It sounds like she has to. That was the Kana, she should always have to pay.
But what's the review? Hefka doesn't help. Because bottom line, who cares with the money?
So you're going to have to say. So we're going to have to see what the Gemara's answer. So that's this is all in the Gemara's kasha. The Nachum then goes on into another piece where he suggests maybe a bigger chiddush in this Meiri. He writes at number 4, Uba'ifin achi yeshleima, the inkavonis hamiiri l'schar ha'sofer greida. The Meiri doesn't just mean that the husband has to pick up the tab for payment of the sofer. El kavonosi demahachkod v'kasev yafinushi haget shaloi. I don't know. Says Reb Nachum, maybe the Meiri means more than that. Vikasav is not just who's responsible for the writing of the get. Vikasav is who's the baal haget, who owns the get, who owns the paper. And I don't know how much you see that from the words of the Meiri, but he says The kishaget ain't a shloi like kirin be v'kasav. If the get doesn't belong to him, it's not v'kasav. Now, pashim shav v'kasav is a writing question. It's not an ownership question. I can write something that's not mine. V'kasav, I can understand that his first pshat maybe makes a lot of sense to me. V'kasav means you're achroi for the writing of the get. And that comes with many parts. That comes to finding a sefer, hiring a sefer, and paying for a sefer. That I hear. The kasav is a job description of what the husband has to do. So the kasav means you have to make sure, instead of translating the kasav, you should write. The kasav means you have to make sure a get is written. I think we can all read the pasuk like that. I don't think anyone would be too shocked. But to say now that the kasav is somehow a reflection of ownership, it's not clear to me where Reb Nachum saw that in the Meiri. And and to be honest, where do you see that in the Torah? The kasav is just talking about me and Bishlam, according to Taisvis. It wasn't from the word v'kasav, it was from the word v'nasa. You have to give something which is yours. Fine. But now you tell me from the word v'kasav, somehow I get from there, you have to own the get. I just don't see where Reb Nachum got it from the Meiri or from the Torah. Now he says, if that's correct, so now there's no two pshatim anymore in the sugya. It's all one pshat. Either v'kasav means you have to own it, or v'nasa means you have to own it. What's the two pshatim? So right, l'fi derech zeh nimtza she'ein nafkamina ben beis hashitas b'taisvis, b'daf chav beis b'pshat ha'gemar. There's no longer a big machlokes rishayim. We spent last week, talking about a machlokes rishayim. Is it from v'kasav, and it's a question of who writes it? Or is it from v'nasa, and it's a question of who owns it? Says v'nachem, there's no question. Everyone's on the same page. They're coming to the same conclusion from different words. One sheet that learns from v'kasav, you have to own it, and one learns from v'nasa, and you have to own it. It's no machlokes anymore. He says, why? El de perushe kama de kasav koi abal. If you hold that the kasav is going on the husband, see afin la makrad de kasav. You learn from the kasav that the husband has to write it, and somehow he has to own it. Still not sure where Reb Nachum saw that, but that's his idea. Well, the perushe basra, and the second shot of Taisvis, means we learn from the word v'nasan that the husband has to own it. But there's no nafkemina practically. Everyone's saying the same conclusion, the husband has to own the get. So therefore, Zakim Nachum, I just took away a whole machlokes rishayim. On the footnote, number 5, he writes, maybe not. Maybe even the way he's learning the Rishonim, there still might be an afkamina. When does the husband have to own it? At what point? He writes in number 5, ul'chari yesh nafkamina ledina ben abe shitas, ma'u adin begav nishlohi aget shlohi b'shasak siva. What happens at the time there was a break in between the writing and the giving? So if it's learned from v'kasav, so you'd assume from shas k'siva, you'd have to own the ownership. If it's v'nasan, it's at the shas nesina maybe, so that would be an afkamina. He then says at the end of the piece, it's not true based on the sugya later on. But
that's the two shots that have to be done after, right?
Possibly, right, correct. So again, I don't well understand where Reb Nachum got it from, where in that sheet is Rishonim from v'kasav, you learn ownership, but that's the way he wants to suggest, and according to him, we just wiped away the machlokes Rishonim unless the nafkamina between the k'siva and the shas nesi.
The Kanas Chazal only is saying that she's just paying the fee for the writing, but the ownership still remains with the husband?
So that's a question. The question is, when she pays for the get, where does that leave us? So the assumption of the Gemara was, when she pays for the get, now she owns the get. So now the get's hers.
Is she owner, or she's just paying the fee?
We'll get to that right now. Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, in his Sefer Shari Chaim, he has this kasha. Right, what was the flow of the Gemara? The Gemara's kasha was, if she gives the money, we have a problem. What's the problem if she gives the money? So the way the Pnei Yeshua learned, and others learned, and Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz himself learned in Taisvis, that means the Sefer is not working for her, and the paper, she pays the cipher. So if she pays the cipher, it's a problem. What's the problem? So either the problem is now the cipher is working for her, or the problem is she owns the get. So in a footnote in the Sefer Shari Chaim, Chaim Shulevitz, the Sefer he wrote on Gittin, I think he has on Ksubis, Shari Chaim. It's a Gevaldik Alumnus Sefer. So he writes like this, number 6.
Today's the Mir Yeshiva Day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just the family. I don't know about the whole yeshiva. Just the family. I don't know about the. V'hainu de hachasarin who. That's true. I got Reb David Kriyat in the morning. He was also in the mirror. That's true. He was also in the mirror. V'hainu de hachasarin who zokti Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz. V'hainu de hachasarin. It should be a fundraiser. V'hainu de hachasarin who daget lavdi dehu. What's the pshat in the Gemara when the Gemara says it's not good when she gives the money because she lavdi dehu kiven shehinu senes aschra. He doesn't own it because she pays for it. The husband is the one who gives the cipher, the paper, and the ink. This is something you can really think about. When you pay for a service, how do you look at it? I grad a thought, not like that. I thought that what the Isha is paying for is the paper, is the ink, is the whole shebang. Chaim Shulevitz is suggesting maybe what the Isha is paying for is just the words. the task of putting words on paper. Everything else is the husband's. The paper is the husband's. Again, the husband is the one who asks him to write a get. The husband says, please write a get for my wife, but she'll pay the tab. Now, what does the tab include? I would have assumed it includes the whole procedure, the paper, the ink. Says Rechem Shalom, maybe it's just the service of actually writing it. It's putting the words on a paper. That's what the Ish is paying for. So everything else is still the husband's. So what's the Gemara's kasha?
Maybe not be the
Ish,
but why would it be the husband?
Because it sounds like he was the one who... There's a big discussion with Shane over here. Every cipher, whose paper and whose ink is it?
The cipher is issuing two bills, one for the two.
Right, so usually the cipher is going to be machna the paper and the ink to the husband. The Ramban writes this, the Ritva discusses this. It might be a chesaron in the kasav if the husband doesn't own all that stuff. So most husbands don't own these types of things unless they're in the writing business. So the cipher is machna to them. So Abraham Shalom is assuming that the husband, when she pays for the cipher, she's only paying for the service. Now, again, you might have to know how the Tekanas Chazal was set up, right?
No, that actually may fit in well with the words in the Miri.
Why?
Why? Because he says Shehi Peres Schar Gita Umishum Tekanas. She's paying for the schar of the get.
Right, so most of us just assume.
You're saying it means the whole thing.
Right.
It means what makes the get a get? It's the
maybe. Maybe again, it really should be Tali in the Gemara and blah blah blah. So wherever the Gemara says that she pays for it, you should know whatever the Gemara means over there.
See. My shoes don't become yours.
Very good. So Chaim Shalevit says he saw in the sefer, I believe it's Oini Gyamtif. I think that's what that abbreviation stands for. It says he saw in the sefer Oini Gyamtif. She'ein loyma bekabanosim the ozl command the oman uman kon b'shvach kli. So Chaim Shalevit thought maybe this is the old rule called uman kon b'shvach kli. If you give me something, I improve it. I actually have a kinyan in it. Uman kon b'shvach kli. Someone who makes something better improves it. He has some form of ownership in it. So Chaim Shalevit thinks so maybe that's the same thing also. The husband, the wife pays for the job. The cipher improves the paper and ink, and now he owns it. Says the Chaim Shalom has nothing to do. So he says, "Why?" Well, so the cipher has a part of the get because he improved it. So says the Chaim Shalom, maybe the Oini Gyamtif suggests what happens is when the husband writes a get, he takes a blank piece of paper and improves it. He makes it now a get. So the halach is when an uman and when a craftsman improves something, he has a shtickle kinyan. So now the cipher has a kinyan in the piece of paper. That kinyan he's marked it to her. Because she paid for it, so now she's the owner of the paper. So says Rechem Shlov, it's the loyshech can have to umen kaim b'shvach kli. The klape uman lo nishtabeach ani yar di aksiv v'lo imidi. Umen kaim b'shvach kli is if you give me a raw piece of thing and I make it into something usable. So klape me, this is something usable. There's nothing the soifer can do with a piece of paper that says Leah is divorcing Yaakov. It's useless to him. His name is not Yaakov. His wife's name is not Leah. No one else is going to buy it because they don't have the right name. It's useless to him. To klape him, he did not improve a blank piece of paper and to make it into a get. Therefore, Zakti B'chaim Shulevitz,
the chosh is not for himself.
Right. So the chosh shvachu shall get ina inyan ela labal bilvad v'loy l'uman. When do we say uman kain b'shvachli? That's when something is improved for everyone and the uman himself. Here, this does not improve the uman's papers.
So how does that work in a case like he said with the shoes? What do I care that his shoes are clean?
No, because the shoe is now improved. This is a valuable thing. No, it's etzem better. If I want, it has an intrinsic shavis l'chol oilam. This get is only shavit to the baal. Again, we're not getting to the whole sugya of umu kanem b'shvachli. That's a big sugya. But so Chaim Shalevitz leaves us with ishtaka tzarechin. He doesn't understand why is it so simple to the Gemara because she pays for the service of the writing of the get. She now owns the get. Why don't we argue that she owns the service? The service is the words, and the rest of it belongs to the husband. Ishtaka leaves off with a tzarechin. Again, it might be totally in
any contract that you.
And I think you have to.
That the words belong to.
I think you have to really think about whenever you hire someone to do a job, you have to ask yourself, what exactly am I paying for? Am I paying for the service of the job? Am I paying for.
So I think it's possible that in the minds of people, they're owning everything. The
words, that's what I would assume when I hire a cipher, I'm hiring for the entire package, which is the ink, the paper, the service, the hours, the minutes. Yeah.
Why do you have to think about that, Rabbi?
What?
Why do you have to think about that in an everyday
case? No, just to see if this cash makes sense. And if you ask yourself, when I hire someone to do something, or to do, what am I paying for? Now, you hire a contractor, right? He has to buy the materials, right?
So
he charges you for it. Right.
My shoes. It shouldn't be that I walk away from the shoe shine and think he owns a piece of my shoe.
Right, so that's the way, in theory, Uman Kohen Veshvachli has. Again, Uman Kohen Veshvachli.
You know, a lawyer for a contract, right? Believe me, the 13 cents he'll say is on me on the paper.
The $10
is, you know?
That's right. So again,
he owns a lot of houses.
That's right. I would assume not like Reb Chaim Shalom Levitz's kasha, but that's the way he sets it up.
Yeah. Can't we say that as soon as the man goes to the, you know, to have it written, they're in a kinyan right there. Therefore, There's an ownership between him and
so that's really his question. So the Panesh, so it's funny. Reb Chaim Shlomitz has this kasha that he doesn't understand. If I come to you and ask you to do a job, and then she comes to you and pays for the job, who are you working for? So we saw it last week. Right, so the Panesh Shua says money supersedes everything. Whoever pays, he's the boss. So therefore says the Panesh Shua, if the husband says and asks and maybe even gives the paper, it's all fine and dandy. But until she comes and pays for it, he works for her. That's what the Panesh Shua says. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, in the same piece in Shari Chaim, he says the same chiddush without quoting the Panesh Shua. He says the same thing. Because again, the kash over here is, the husband is clearly the one who calls up the cipher and says, write me again. And according to him, he even gives the paper and the ink. But she pays for the service. So the question is, so who's working for who? So the Panei Shua says she's working for, the Sofer is working for her. Good. But what? Working for him, working for her as what? As someone who puts paper on puts words on a paper. But everything else is still the husband. So why is it no good? That's Reb Chaim Shmulevitz's kash. Another kash that I think was asked last week is a kash I saw today from the Birkas Avraham.
Why didn't she just offset her ksuba by, I don't know, 10 zuz or rubles or whatever it is? I mean, I don't get the whole thing. It's maybe the first time and I must have missed it in Daphne on many times. But to think that the only way it could be affected is if she actually pays for it in order to make sure that we don't have an Aguna problem just seems so far-fetched.
That was the Tekanos Chazal.
Yeah,
so the question of the Gemara now is when Tekanos Chazal...
Ultimately, he's going to want a divorce, her, and he's the only one that can, at the end of the day, affect the divorce.
Correct.
If we're talking about 10 rubles or whatever the ksuba amounts are, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to give you 190 instead of 200 or 90 instead of 100, whatever the amounts are.
I mean, it sounds like from the Gemara that Tekanos Chazal, this thing about her paying was something we didn't want to budge on. Because in the cases where it becomes an issue, we're happy that it's in place. So therefore, if her paying for it ruins the get, so that we have a kasha, then all the getting should be thrown out. So which the Gemara is going to somehow fix that in a minute. But what was the cheshbon of the Gemara? The Gemara moves on. Okay, so that's the first issue of the Gemara. If you remember, we had the Gemara had another kasha. The Elo Mishum Dechsiv Nasan. About 4 lines into the Gemara, back in number 1, the Gemara says, I have another problem why these getting are no good. Because it says in the Torah of Nasan, V'hacha lo yov lo midi. He didn't give her anything. I mean, he didn't give her anything. He gave her a get. So if you look in Rashi, Rashi writes, number 2b, and all the way on the left, V'nasan bar nesina sheyeh shavapruta. You have to give her something of giving, which is called a shavapruta. But in other, hopefully today or next week, we'll talk about other places in the Torah where you find the word V'nasan, and how much do you have to give. There are other places in the Torah where we find the word V'nasan, and not always is there a minimal amount required for fulfillment of V'nasan. The big example is by Truma. It says over there in the Torah V'nasan, and you can even give a small, teeny little bit amount for Truma and a pot is a Midaraisa. Midabon and the Shurim. Okay. You know the Noida Behuda. Okay. Everyone calls it the Noida Behuda. It's really a Taisirid. It's really Maram Chalav. Early Rishayim say this in Psachim, Taisirid, and Kedushim. But everyone knows that as the Noida Behuda. Yeah, that's a famous Tegel Torah that there's two dinim in the Sinas Chalav. What? Probably not a Taisirid. But Mistama, he had Maram Chalav, maybe, I don't know. But there's a famous Noida Behuda that there's two dinim. It's on the sheet even. I have it over here. It's number 19. That there's two dinim in the Sinas Chalav. One is to be to make it not Tevel, and one is to be Yoytzi Yudin of Nasan Lekain. We'll hopefully get to that at some point. But in any case, Rashi learns the Gemara that the problem over here is that when you give something that has no value, it's not a fulfillment of a Nasa. And the Gemara assumes a get has no value. So the Pnei Yeshua has a kasha. He doesn't understand. Why does a get have no value? He doesn't understand. Why do you look at a get as valueless? So the Beis Avraham asks a similar kasha. He writes, Hob v'hikshuni. What do you mean? Who does it have to be valued to? To the husband? What do you mean? For the husband, this is very valuable. For her, it's very valuable. Who is this not valuable for? For her, this is going to be the greatest piece of paper she ever gets in her life. She's going to, you know, hang it up on her wall forever and ever that she's a free girl. So what do you mean it's not worth? Why does the Gemara think it's not worth? Who cares? It's shove it to me, it's shove it to you. We're the only ones who matter. Why does it matter to anyone else? So says the Birchas Avraham, says the Avraham, he says, based on the Yisrael Nachren, which we've spoken about many times, if let's say, for example, you have your great-great-grandmother's Becher that she got from who knows what, and it's in the family for 100,000 years, it's worth $3. and someone breaks it, but to you it's worth the world. And someone steals it or breaks it, you know how much you get for it? $3. That's the way the world works. This value, that intrinsic value, and it doesn't matter anything in a court of law, it goes by what is sold on the street. This comes up a lot in Baba Kamba, this type of idea in Bamitzi and other places. The value of things are defined by what they sell for on the street. The fact that it has sentimental value to you is beautiful and has no halachic ramification. So Zok says the Bechazra, this is what we really saw earlier from earlier, Reb Nachum pointed this out. Something that to you, I'm very happy that you and your husband have unbelievable value for this paper. But no one else can care less about this piece of paper. It has no value to anyone else except for you too. Therefore, Zok the Bechazra, Afa Bisha Metzinu Gamlin Dide Shavali, Vakoshkim Yadush of Emes Shavaloy, Zemikomakam, Lefia Klaus Shalharan Dole Shech Lide Shavali. He says, doesn't matter that to me it's worth it. If it's not sold on the market's value for Shavapruta, it doesn't count. Therefore, although to the parties involved this is very valued, but to the Alma, to the outside world, this is not considered a Dover HaShava Pruta. If you'd steal this get, you wouldn't be considered a Gain of Shava Pruta. If you'd be Mazik the get, Mazik the get is more complicated because it's Garmi. It's not really worth anything. It's just a representation of something else. But it doesn't really have a value. Therefore, Zakta Bechaz Avram, that's why the Gemara thinks that a get has no Shavius. And therefore, the Gemara thinks that a get has to have a Shavius. And because it doesn't have a Shavius, it's a problem. Now, why does the Gemara think a get has to have a shavis? Because it says the word v'nosan. Rashi points out v'nosan, she'i a shav pruta. It has to at least be a pruta. Again, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but just keep in mind that sometimes when a person gives something, it can either be a tashlumen, or sometimes it's just a transfer. The moshel, when a husband gives a get to his wife, he's not paying his wife, he's transferring something to his wife. So this v'nosan is more of a transfer. Sometimes v'nosan is a payment. For example, if a person, a zar who eats truma, it says he has to give to the kohen. That giving is not just a transfer. That's a tashlumen. So I can understand, ain't tashlumen pachas mishava pruta. But if the Torah just wants you to transfer, then there's really no reason why a transfer should have a minimal amount required. But that's the Havamid Gemara. To which the Gemara answers is not true. So the Gemara, no. Dilma nesinas geti. Maybe all the Torah writes with v'nasan, it's not give something of value, it means just to transfer. I mean, the shaka of a tie of the Gemara is how to tie the word v'nasan. Does v'nasan mean like a payment, and payments have a minimal amount required? Or v'nasan just means to physically transfer. Transfers can be on anything. Anything you can transfer. So it's Gemara teida. I'll bring you a raya that the Torah does not require a get to have any value. The shalchu mitam, they send from there, kosval asuri hano kosher, because you're allowed to write a get on asuri hano. Asuri hano have no value, they're worthless, and so you're allowed to give a get. So it must be that when the Torah said give, it didn't mean give something of value, because asuri hano has no value. It must be the Torah said just give, just transfer. Transfer from your ownership to her ownership, from your house to her house. That's a fulfillment of the Nasan, and therefore it could be less than Shavapruta. It could even be asuri hano. Okay, yeah.
You say asuri hano has no value, I mean, yet to a certain population it has no value. Okay. But when you say sell it on the market,
you might be able to sell it. There is a market for it. Okay. So we're gonna have to talk about how good of a comparison is the Suri Hano to Davish Shav Puta. But let's just finish up the Suri Hano and we'll get back into
the Gemara just by saying that any get is not worth the Shav Puta?
That's what it sounds like.
The paper and the ink is not worth anything.
So there's a Pnei Yeshua which I spent quite a while trying to break my head over, and I wasn't Zoicha. Well, he has this kasha, he doesn't understand, he has this whole new creative way of learning the Gemara. I know, I was going to put it down just to see if we could figure it out together, but I opted out, but I don't know. He has some halach. Yeah, we would have thought it has some value. Yeah, I don't know. I'm with you. I'm not sure. He has this kash on Rashi. That's why he doesn't like Rashi, because it comes with a whole other shot. He finds it very hard to believe. Well, the Gemara says, I could pass all getting. Every get in the world, you can't use the paper for something. You know, Bishlam, you want to tell me some very cheap written get, but every get in the world is not usable, very hard to look. So Ben Yeshua has that kasha, how he gets, he has a whole other pshat, I'm not clear, but Rashi and Taisus seem to have assumed like him that it's lacking in the value. Let's just read the next shtickle Gemara, and then we'll have to really get into the sugya of Asuri Hano. So Gemara says, Shalch Gufa, let's go back to the idea of Asuri Hano, Shalch Mitam, Kasval Asuri Hano Kash. Again, it's not a Mishnah anywhere, it's a Bryce. You're allowed to write a get on a Asuri Hano. And the question really is how do you know this? And the Gemara never really proves it from anywhere. The Gemara just says it as a factual piece of information. The Gemara kind of moves on. You're allowed to do it. And obviously this is going to create a major, major discussion in both Rishayim and Achrayim about ownership and Kinyan and transfer, all those good things that we learned about already in this parak. So the Gemara says, Kasha Asuri Hano, Kasha Omer Vashi, Afanan Amitina. Oh, so he said, I'll back it up. Because it says, Allah Shal Zayis. You're allowed to write a get on the leaf of a Zayis. So you see, you're allowed to use Asuri Hano. Where do you see that? Tzak Rashi, 2b, ha'olo shal zayis, she'ina shava klum, has no value. What can you do with a little bit of a leaf? A leaf is so, has no value. So again, you see again from the Gemara, we're comparing valueless to Suri Hano. We're looking at something that has no value, no market value, is equivalent to Suriana. So that Gemara, if I'm allowed to write a get on Olah Shel Zayis, which has no value, so clearly I'm allowed to write something on a Suriana. So the Gemara says, not so fast. Dil Mushani Olah Shel Zayis, the Chazitz Terufe. That's not true. And Olah Shel Zayis, like Rashi, Im Olin Harbe Lishkavalein. You can use one Olin on its own is useless. But when put together with five others, now serves a purpose. Oy lemachal behema. So what the Gemara sounds like it's doing over here is basically being mechalik between something which is not worth a pruta on its own to something like a suriano. Something like a suriano will never ever serve a purpose in your life. It's completely useless.
Unless suriano, obviously, you can't give it to God either.
Right, we're talking about that a suriano you can't get anything out of. We'll have to talk about what types of a suriano, break it down when we get there.
Still one,
all the shells right, but the point is, right, but the point is, that Etzem has value, right? It does, because if I, meaning it has,
it should be like Chatzi Shir,
right? That's the whole idea of Chazir Tzerufi. Chazir Tzerufi means the thing itself on its own has some value, it doesn't have as much value.
Get is also Chazir Tzerufi.
It's not, you can't use it because what you could do with a Suriyah, not
you
could
have a whole bunch of getting, and but still,
not a Suriyah, not a Suriyah, no. Again, yeah, it's a Suriyana. A Suriyana is mamish mukta. There's nothing you can do with it. So the Gemara feels that something which is less than the apruta on its own, but can eventually be useful one day, is not considered the same as a Suriyana, which is completely useless and valueless type of thing. Now you're right, there's no market for one Olah Shel Zayis. No one's going to buy one Olah Shel Zayis. But if I give you one Olah Shel Zayis, although what I'm giving you is not with a pruta on a market value, I'm at least giving you something of, I'm not going to say value, something of useful purpose. Giving it a Suriyana is a useless transfer. There's nothing you can do with the Suriyana.
Suriyana in and of itself has intrinsic value.
For what?
Well, when you have a get, we talked about get, it's value to me, it's value right. To the woman, but it's not value to anybody else.
Correct.
Okay, so this hana, the Suriyana, it's nothing for me, it's nothing for you. But in and of itself, it's a piece of paper that has value intrinsically.
Okay, so we have to figure out over here, how does this all work? You know, it doesn't have a value for the market, so what's wrong with it? What's the chassan over here in the Suriyana? I'm not going to be nene from it. So I'm not being nene from it. I'm not using the paper for anything. It's going to hang on the wall or put it in a book. I'm not going to touch it. I'm not going to use it. I'm not going to lay on it. I'm not going to use it. Why is that called using hana? What am I using the hana for over here to make a get? The Torah says, give a get. I don't want any hana from the get. I don't want to use the get. I'll put it away. I won't touch it. I won't use it. I won't use it as a bookmark. So why is it a problem of a Suriyana not to use it for a get? Or in theory, would it be? So we'll have to see in a second how that works with regard to get. Then the Gemara concludes, an interesting conclusion. Tanya, Rebbe, Yoyim, Mikosva, Suriyana, Kosh. Again, these are all no Mishnayis. Nafak, Levi, Dorsha, Mishmei, the Rebbe. Levi went out and he tried to spread the word of Rebbe that a Suriyana is Kosh. V'loi Kolsu. Mishmei, the Rabbe, V'loi Kolsu. He didn't really get popular... not at all popular support initially. And what happened? So they sent it out, V'loi Kosu, Mishmei, the Rabbe, V'loi Kosu. Alma, Hilchos, Kavose. It's very funny, very interesting Gemara. Look, Rashi, what's going on over here? V'loi kilsua, mishum de'amalei mishmadi yechida. When they came out and just said there's one person who said this, no one accepted it. One massive chiddush about a Suriyana, no one accepted it. But dorsh zim nachrit mishmei de'rabim ke'echad de'l'kablamine. They really wanted this statement of a Suriyana to be accepted. So they basically said instead of a Rebbe, they said mishem a lot of people and it was accepted. So to come off from the fact that it was accepted, that's the right. What's the right? It's a grashi. Mid torach kule hayde lekablua. Why were they so bothered that this should be accepted? Alma hilchos akavase. Very interesting conclusion. That since they mutchered so badly for this to be in the skabal halacha, and they rewrote it, but they pitched it and they changed how they're selling it. That must be that it's correct. So Tais says a kasha that's not true. There's gemaras that go the other way. From the fact you're trying so hard. Sounds like it's a hard sell. And you have to try this hard. Sometimes it's like, it doesn't belong. But this is the way Rashi learns the most. No question, you can write again on a Suriyana.
The Rebbe on his own would have the authority to...
You would have assumed that apparently did not catch on enough in his days. So the question that we are really have to deal with now is, if you're not allowed to be nana from a Suriyana, how are you allowed to use it to create a Chalois Ishus? That's a great Hana. She's free, he's free, that's Hana. So you're telling me I'm not using the actual paper for the Hana, but from this paper I'm deriving benefit. She's free, I'm now no longer bound by any halachic responsibilities. I'm getting a lot of pleasure on this little piece of paper. Why is that not a problem of being nana from a Suriyana?
What for, right?
Huh?
What for that piece of paper?
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah, so, ownership itself could be
Hana. Well, again, so let's assume there's no ownership on the piece of paper. That we'll have to deal with next week. Is there such a concept called ownership on a Suriyana? Now, everyone should be bothered if we just learned in the Gemara that Vinasa means he has to own the paper. He can't own the paper. It's impossible. So how does it get work with the Suriyana? That's major kasha number one. That's the, we'll call that the molam.
The kash was yes on the paper. The answer is he doesn't have to own the paper.
Right, right. So the question is, after all the smoke clears, that there a din, and Nachas Gerish, the husband has to use... Now, we had other Gemaras...
You saw another
So that was the Bikasha. So then that takes us back to the whole discussion that we had in the Gemara further up, the Amman Achaf on the base. I raise the Gitech Ven Yar Shali. What's the problem? If he doesn't have to own the get, why is it a problem?
And here it should be read that also you spoil a prox
bobber. Right, right, right. That's where...
He's holding on to it.
Right, okay. That's the whole tais that we'll have to believe to see next week. But that's part of the discussion. So there's a tais later on that says Mefurish. Tosfos number 8 writes, he says, "V'afilu avehecha hocha esur de'raisa so mikol mokim have a get k'tamin el kasher al esurin akasher." Av agav the osa lichtoif. He's not allowed to do it. It's not a right. Tamisane b'esurin ano. But the get's still chal. I mean, lichatchi. If you came to the rabbi, you came to the service, said, "I want to write a get in esurin," the rabbi's gonna say, "No, you're not allowed to." That's being nana from esurin ano. But b'diavet, for some strange reason, the get's chal. But you're not allowed to do it lichatchi. So when the Gemara says Kosval Asuriyah, no, it's Mamish B'dievet. If B'dievet, the get was written on Asuriyah, and it was given, the get's valid. But to go L'chathchila, says Taisus, and actually write again in Asuriyah, that you're not allowed to do. That's going out deliberately to be Nenef from Asuriyah. If you look at number 9, Shulchan Aruch, Paskins, get Shekosval Asuriyah, no kosher. Now what does that sound like to you? Get Shekosval Asuriyah, no kosher. Sounds very L'chathchila.
Yeah.
So that sounds very B'dievet to me. So the Beis Shmuel writes, kosher, mashma B'dievet kosher. The Beis Shmuel is medayik from the Mechaber. That's only b'diavad. Aval lechatchila aser. You can't go out lechatchila right again in a surah, no? Right. V'hayru kedas ha-toysev is the sviil lehu keid mishum nehaviki ilu misanim b'surah, no? Because if you're going to go out, that's direct hana. So the question is, what's the difference between direct hana and after the fact hana? At the end of the day, you're getting hana. But for some reason, toysev and the Mechaber at this point think that if you go lechatchila, no, not allowed. But if after the fact, we'll let the get go through. But he writes at the end of Beis Shmuel writes, "Aval haRambam vaTor machshirim afilu lechatchila." But the Rambam and the Tor, they're machshir even lechatchila. What do they write? So if you look at number 11, the Tor, he writes, "Al kol dover tolush on anything that's detached." Kaisven haget, you're allowed to write a get afilu al esuriano. So the Bach was medayik from this Tor. That means even lechatchila.
Maybe it's because of Yishuma Grunos. We want to create at the end of the day a divorce over here. If we're
going to
be so picky about it, we're
going to
have a situation where either...
Yeah, but the problem, I'm not so sure what the probability of having a Suri Hano were. I don't know. We'll have to get to the different types of a Suri Hano. But the other question is, but if Taka, you're not allowed to be Nana from it, so we're setting a guy to do an Aveiru. So how are we allowed to do that? So these Rishayim are assuming that L'chadchil, you can go over to a Suri Hano, use it for your benefit, and that's okay. The question is, how do you justify that? That's called getting Hano from a Suri Hano. So the Bach writes in number 12, he really thinks the Torah is right. You're allowed to do it lechatchila. I've heard the Kaim and the Osel Lahenes b'Suri Hano. Well, then what happened to the din of Inal b'Nene? That's when you have intent to get pleasure. So Zokta the Bach, he gets around the kash by saying you don't intend. I'm not intending to get Hano from the Suri Hano. I'm intending to divorce my wife. And that's my intention. Even though it's all a byproduct,
and you can do that by every
he thinks that's motuk the east of a parak bahacha because of get, lo mischavin lahenis menu klal, el lichtol of get v'shar lechatchila. So after Bach, so he must assume that Hano means some actual pleasure from the paper. So that's what he's arguing. That's what we'd call secondary Hano. That's a toitsa from the paper. The actual paper, if I want to use the paper to stuff a bottle, I want to use the paper to hit someone, that's Hano from the paper. This is Hano that comes out of the words on the paper.
Is this halakhi Hano? Let's say a man goes over to a woman, right? And we kind of view the Hano that I'm getting from divorcing my wife. Well, the Hano that you get from your husband divorcing you. Is that real Hano?
Probably not. There's no market value for it. There's
so
no market.
Then what's the problem? This is not halakhli
hana. Right, so that I think that's what he means to answer. I think that's really his answer. So now you really have to turn around and say, so what's Pshat in Taisvus? What's Pshat Taisvus or Shulchan Aruch? Well, what hana are you really getting? I'm getting a hana from the paper. The paper's a piece of paper that's going to sit on my desk and do nothing for me. It's just there's a din that this piece of paper creates a halois, and this halois gives me X and Y dinam, X and Y halachas. So that's a fundamental shayla of how to view a suri hana. What exactly does it mean not to be nana from a suri hana? That's the Bach's take on it. The Chalkas Mechoike goes mamish mikotz al kotz at the opposite end. He doesn't buy into any of this. He writes in number 15, Udvarim tmuim mo'id. Mamish apela. Eich nechlek al divya atoysis b'davar poshet b'zeh. doesn't say how anyone would argue on Tosfos. Isn't that the greatest pleasure with this piece of paper working for me? It's doing what I need to get done. So the Bach was arguing, it's all like a secondary. So it's not secondary, this is exactly the purpose of the paper. The purpose of the paper is to create this dip. He says, he's actually saving money. He's not going to have to buy a different piece of paper. Now he's saving paper. So he's saving money in an indirect way by penny saved, a penny earned. He's getting an extra.
Is that always true?
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that works like that by Assyria. No. So he says, V'loigarazim besakish alvay de zara. The asr. Wow, this is the greatest honor. Gets her out of the house. She was disturbing the house, and now she's out. What do you do with these rishonim? Zog techachim a real chiddush. He says lachatchila means mitzad hilchas get. How mitzad is her get? What he means is al hilchas get. This is fine. Al hilchas asura no yerodeya. That's a different problem. It means when the Rishonim wrote, you can write again in the Surah Na, they meant from a Hilchas Gerushin point of view. You want to know what about Hilchas the Surah Na, so you have to learn your day and figure out what to do. We're coming from an Evan Ezra point of view. That's always when people start splitting things. I'm telling you, like we give kashrus to the food. Everything around it, that's not our problem. You know, we're not talking about all the other things. We give kashrus to the food. Here also. We're saying that again in the Surah Na is kashrus and Hilchas Gittin. You want to know whether or not you're allowed to be Nenef and Mesurah? No. You want to know if you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos? No. So you can't give the get if you're driving your car also. But that's not our job. Our job is to define the get with regard to Hilchas Evan Ezra. That's the way the Hilchas Mechalikik wants to tain. And therefore, he wants to disagree. He wants to think it's not Pshat HaMechalikik's Rishayim. Everyone agrees. They were just discussing different points. Tosfos was discussing the whole package while the Torah is just discussing a small fraction of the equation.
How far do we take it? So if we found, for instance, that the sulfur wrote the get on Shabbos.
Right. So that's the argument. The argument is there's only a certain amount of involvement in the Ksivas HaGet that passes the get for halachic purposes. And they're arguing that that's beyond. That's what he wants to suggest. The Torah's Gittin comes up with a different answer. Torah's Gittin says it depends on the storyline over here. He writes in number 14, he says, Avalech Atchila Aser, Dibukom Mokam HaSoifer Shekosav Bechinam Kadesh Lila Agein Mutter. So what happens if the Sofer decides, you know what, I'm going to write together because I feel bad for this girl, free. Then there's no problem on the Surah, because who's getting any Hanah out of this? The Sofer. What Hanah is the Sofer getting? He's doing a mitzvah. Mitzvah is lavel honest. So writes the Torah's Gittin.
Why is the Baal getting
a mitzvah? So that's a question, Stamazay. The Pasuk is saying, just because the Pasuk doesn't mean it's a mitzvah. That's the question. Is it a matter or is it a mitzvah? Right, that's the old question. If you assume it's a mitzvah, you're going to argue mitzvah is lavel honest. I haven't seen anyone make that argument. I'm not sure why.
It's a case with the woman's mezana. Then it is a mitzvah.
Then it could be a mitzvah. For the Sofer, it's for sure a mitzvah. He's just doing chesed. So for the Sofer, says the Torah's Gittin, if the Sofer writes a get out of the kindness of his heart, just because he wants to help Klai, so for him it's a mitzvah, we could say mitzvah's lavel honest. Okay, so that's just a technical issue of how to use a Surah Na. But I'll make a small haskalah on the Tosfos number 15 about Nesina. The Gemara says that maybe Nesina means it has to be a Shavuot Pruto, and for the Gemara it doesn't, because Nesina just means give the paper. Says Tosfos, V'chein shalaf ish na'aloi v'nasan re'yehu. So Tosfos, we find this in other places. It says in Rus, when they're talking about Chalipin, it says, shalaf ish na'aloi, you give the sudr, the thing you're making chalipin with, you give to your friend. The halach is by chalipin, the object you use to do what we call today kinyan chalipin, the kinyan sudr, does not have to be worth a shavapruta. When you went to the rabbi to sell your chametz, and he did a kinyan sudr, and that by that kinyan sudr, he became your messenger. The thing that the rabbi used does not have to be worth a shavapruta. It could be something even less than a shavapruta. He could have picked up one tissue. Let's assume one tissue is worth less than a shavapruta. So that would also be good. Zok Taisus, what do you see over here? That the word vinasan does not always require a minimal amount of value. You can do a vinasan even though it's not worth a pruta. So here also, when the Torah said vinasan, it doesn't mean give a value of a pruta. It just means give a object. There's only one slight problem. As the Gemara Bava Metzia says, you can't use Isuri Hanoah for Chalipin. That doesn't seem to fit the narrative of our Gemara. Our Gemara set up a narrative that Isuri Hanoah and not Shavapruta go hand in hand. Because the Torah never requires a mice in the Sinas HaShavis. The Torah just requires a physical transfer. So Frek de Mashah, Frek de Mamshif, and later Achrem as well, if you're telling me now that we're comparing Chalipin to Get, So the same way a get can be given on a suri hana and less than a shava pruta, why is chalipin any different? Chalipin you can give less than a shava pruta, but you can't give on a suri hana. That's mefurish gemara. The gemara says you can't give a suri hana. So if that's an example, the rabbi would want to use a pen that was a suri hana, was used for whatever, avodah zarah. So you wouldn't be able to use that for chalipin, even though you can use that for get. So frak to Masha, what happened to the comparison in our gemara? So the Masha writes in number 16, the loy domi lekinyan sudar dahacha. Says the Marsha, you're right. In theory, they should be comparable. But there's a one difference by Chalipin. The Torah writes the word na'al. So somehow, some way from that word we learn, you can't use the Surah Na'al. The question is, what do you see from that word? That means you give a shoe. A shoe can't be a shoe if it's a Surah Na'al. So that's the question on the Marsha. But that's the Marsha's answer. The Marsha's answer, you're right. In simple comparison, they should be equal. And if they should be equal, you should be able to use the Surah Hanah. But nonetheless, we don't use the Surah Hanah because the Torah says minnow. So, I guess one way of understanding is that a minnow means a functioning minnow. A shoe means something that's functioning. But again, the Torah says, V'nasan law, give her what? The Sefer Krisis. So just give her, what's a functioning Sefer Krisis? There's no such, you know, give it to her. But here the Torah says, give her a minnow. So a minnow sounds like you have to give her something that functions as a minnow. And if it's a Surah Hanah, it doesn't function. Again, the next week we'll talk more about the Avnei Miluim, the Dvar Avram, the Nedim Yehuda, and we'll see the rest of the Taisa that talks about other Surah Hanah. And if there's time, we'll start to break down the Shaila of who owns the Surah Hanah. Can you own a Surah Hanah? Can you transfer a Surah Hanah? All the good Shailas that come up with the Lamedus of Gittin.